This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to Prop Points. I'm Jeff Erickson. He's Nick Whalen. We are with RotoWire.com, and we've got a fun show for you today. A lot of basketball talk with the NBA Conference Finals set. We're going to talk a little to bet or not to bet NFL win totals. I always love talking NFL win totals. They're not always the best to, you know, pop down money in May for a long-term bet, but I like talking about it anyhow there. Eric Halterman's going to join us talking about Monday's baseball slate. We'll talk more baseball with my picks later on as well. They squeeze in some PGA talk as well. But let's jump right into the NBA talk first, Nick. The Nuggets have been thunderstruck. That series went seven. Kudos to the Nuggets for getting it to seven, but man, oh man, this is what the Thunder do. They are a wagon, and when they get rolling, it's tough to get them off that roll, and we saw that yesterday.
Yeah, this was, I think, the best game of the playoffs so far from OKC. And look, I had OKC in seven to win this series. I was nervous. You don't want to go into a winner-take-all game when Nikola Jokic is on the other side. And look, I thought Denver got off to a really nice start. You know, they were leading this game by double digits midway through the first quarter. You know, OKC, I thought, came out a little bit tight. They're missing open shots. You know, they only had 10 points 8 minutes into this game, but it was crucial for the Thunder to narrow that gap just to five at the end of the first quarter. You know, they kept whittling it down. It's a one possession game for most of the second quarter. And then they go on that run, that avalanche, to end the first half. And it was forcing turnovers. It was creating points off of those turnovers. You know, a couple of just uncontested fast breaks where you're poking the ball away and there's Jalen Williams running down for a wide open dunk. And, you know, every team goes on these runs throughout a playoffs. It's not unique just to the Oklahoma City Thunder. But to me, Jeff, what is unique to this team and something that we've seen a few times already throughout these playoffs, even when it feels like they haven't necessarily been on their A game more often than not, is that they picked up where they left off in the third quarter. It's one thing to create that separation, to go in with a double-digit lead at halftime. A lot of teams take their foot off the gas. They allow the opponent to sneak back in. I mean, 4 or 5 minutes into the third quarter, you just kind of felt like this game was over and the Thunder were off and running. So deserved, certainly, for OKC to make it to the Western Conference Finals. They are heavy favorites over the Minnesota Timberwolves. I will say, Jeff, you know, there's been, you know, this narrative out there that, man, these are not the four teams that we thought we would get. There's not really a superpower out there outside of OKC. One, if you're the Thunder, you got to be thrilled with how this bracket is breaking. If you take care of business as a heavy favorite against Minnesota, you know, you're getting the three or the four seed in the Eastern Conference. But overall, I love this Final Four, man. This is now going to be 7 times in 7 years that we will have a unique NBA champion. And this group specifically, the Indiana Pacers have never won the finals. Minnesota has never won the finals. OKC has never won as a franchise separate from Seattle. And of course, the New York Knicks haven't won since 1973. So I think we have some really, really compelling narratives as we now head into the conference finals.
Yeah, and it's a changing of the guard. You know, it's there was a lot of talk going in the start of the playoffs how the old guard still runs the NBA and all that. And, you know, we looked at the Olympics, for instance, there is Curry and LeBron driven. The narrative's changed. It's SGA, it's Brunson, it's Halliburton, it's Ant-Man. You know, we have a next gen kicking in here. And it just illustrates the depth of the NBA, I think, and just how much talent there is. It's one of the things I love.
Yeah, we've emerged from the super team era. You know, that feels dead. There was a full decade really starting when, you know, when LeBron and Chris Bosh ended up in Miami in 2010, where it almost felt predetermined. And it didn't always turn out that way, right? I mean, year one of the Miami Heat, they end up losing in the finals to the Dallas Mavericks, but you had a pretty good sense that it was like, all right, whatever team LeBron is on, we can just pencil them in the East. And then for a while there, it just felt like the Warriors were the default NBA champion. And you just can't say that anymore. And I don't think that's changing anytime soon. And you're right. It's the depth of talent around the league. And of course, the new CBA also makes it a little bit more difficult to stack that talent. But, you know, teams that have pursued that route of team building, it just hasn't really worked, right? You know, the 76ers are kind of trying that, right? Bringing in Paul George to pair with Maxi and Embiid. And, you know, I think to a lesser degree, the LA Clippers, you know, pairing Paul George and Kawhi Leonard and then pairing James Harden and Kawhi Leonard. This idea that you can just have like two or three really good players and then fill in the rest of your roster, it just doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work. You got to be deep. You have to have versatility. And it's not a coincidence to me that all four of these teams, especially Indiana and OKC, are some of the deepest teams in the NBA. Teams that, you know, don't go into a series saying, ah, we're only comfortable playing like five, maybe six guys. I mean, you look at some of the names that the Thunder are bringing off the bench. I mean, Alex Caruso was arguably the second most important player in that Nuggets series. Kayson Wallace is one of the best on-ball defenders in the NBA. So it's the teams that I think are the best at team building, at building out an entire roster, as opposed to just, all right, what superstar can we trade for? What superstar can we pair with him? Those are the teams that are being rewarded now in the modern NBA.
Yeah, and I think the new CBA has had a lot to do with that too, and how you can afford the depth pieces there. If you go with the three-star method there, there's very little room to maneuver. I mean, you saw that with the Lakers a little bit at the trade deadline. They went out, they got Luka, and then they're like, okay, now we need a big man, and we have one trade option. It didn't work out. Okay, I guess we'll sign Alex Len, a guy we didn't even use in the playoffs there. You look at the Suns and how screwed they were. Meanwhile, you look at like the Alex Caruso trade, It was an interesting deal. It got enough analysis in the offseason, but it wasn't like, oh my God, Paul George. No, but that was such a critical maneuver for the OKC. You look at the Pacers, how, you know, they trade for Nesmith with the Celtics in the Brogdon deal. They get Nembhard in the second round of the draft. You know, you're getting some under the radar acquisitions that are perfect team builder acquisitions.
Yeah, I think it's more important than ever to, you know, especially if you're already a good team, to hit on a couple of late first round picks or strike gold in the second round, signing like Caruso, like you mentioned, which, you know, I don't remember at the time anybody saying, yeah, that'll help when they play the Nuggets because he can go guard Nikola Jokic, right? I mean, that's how they ended this series with, you know, your backup point guard being your primary defender on Nikola Jokic. And, you know, I think the Thunder prioritizing defense first with a lot of these additions has really helped them as the playoffs have gone along, because the shooting has been pretty hot and cold. I mean, even yesterday when, you know, they win that game by 32, they put up 125. It's not like this was some sort of, you know, crazy outlier shooting performance. Like they barely shot 30% from three as a team. They won that game defensively. And I think when you look at the Western Conference Finals, again, the Thunder are big favorites for a reason. To me, the biggest advantage that they have is that they don't turn the ball over and they force the most turnovers of any team in the NBA. And, you know, Minnesota, you're coming off of this weird series against Golden State where it felt like it was like, man, this is a little too easy because they don't have Steph Curry. Timberwolves turned the ball over a ton in round two. They had 20 plus turnovers in each of the final three games of that series. And look, when you know that Steph Curry's not out there, maybe that changes your level of focus to some degree. I know some of those games were semi blowouts, but I worry about Minnesota taking care of the ball against this Thunder defense, especially if that series is officiated the same way that the Nuggets series was.
Yep, indeed. We're going to talk a little PGA, but first, got to talk about let you know about rotowire.com. Of course, we know rotowire.com, but to you, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Got plenty of NBA talk before these conference finals start up tomorrow, but we're going to pivot our attention right now over to the PGA. Scottie Scheffler caught fire on the back nine on Saturday and never looked back. At one point in time, he did get tied by Rahm yesterday, but even then, I never felt like, oh my gosh, he's in danger here. It was more like, oh, Rahm's playing really well. Can he keep it up? No, he couldn't, and Scottie turned on the gas late.
Yeah, there was a moment where this looked like it was going to be a two-man battle, and you know, John Rahm missed some putts that he usually makes, a couple that just never really had a chance, you know. And they're the type of putts, Jeff, that when you're watching it on TV, you're like, how does one of the best players in the world miss that? It's a much more difficult putt than it comes through on the telecast. But yeah, it ended up being a runaway victory for Scottie Scheffler. Had a, you know, huge cushion heading into the last couple of holes. Ended up bogeying 18, of course, did not matter. Still won the tournament by five strokes. And you know, we talked about this on Friday. I think Scheffler was about to tee off as we were finishing up the show. He was still the betting favorite to win the tournament, despite being, I believe, eight strokes back of Johnny Vegas at the time. And you know, when you read quotes and you see interviews from other players, I mean, there is, I'm hesitant to say it's Tiger-like, but there is a Tiger-like reverence, I think, for the way that Scottie Scheffler is playing right now. And he's not as 100% intimidating, both physically and psychologically, as Tiger Woods was, but there's that same sense of inevitability right now when Scottie Scheffler is in the mix.
To your point, Harris English played early yesterday. He was not among the leaders, had a great round, finished six under. And they're interviewing him. The leaders had barely teed off and they're asking him about the rest of the tournament. And he's like, yeah, Scotty's got this. Felt like 100% certain that Scotty had it. And sure enough, he did. I guarantee you many other players on the tour feel that sense of inevitability when Scotty's rolling.
Yep. Well, Jeff, to look ahead to this coming week, we have the Charles Schwab coming up, which is not a major. I want to be very clear. It's not going to be the same type of field. Mm-hmm. Scottie Scheffler is expected to play. He is plus 260 to win this tournament. No one else is shorter than 22-1.
Remarkable. Just really, really remarkable there. Quickly, hockey. We had a game seven last night. Again, just like basketball, it didn't feel like a game seven because Florida just rolled over Toronto. The difference being is they did it on the road. And they got to Toronto early. It's 3-0 after two periods. You know, the little bit of hope at the start of the third period, and that was quickly squelched by the Panthers, who got three more goals on top of that. We had fans leaving early. We had fans throwing hats and jerseys onto the ice in disgust. Not for a hat trick, but out of disgust. No truth to the rumor that Paul Bruno erased his tattoo that he got for the playoffs for us here. We'll ask him when we bring him on next to preview one of the final game, conference finals, but still, very disappointing result for Toronto. Looking ahead, you got Carolina is a favorite in the series, minus 125 over Florida, or in game one, excuse me, I should say there on that one there. We'll talk more hockey later on in the week as well. We're going to talk football win totals coming up next on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen from RotoWire with you here. We're going to do to bet or not to bet. And we're going to do it NFL wins totals style here. We're going to kind of delve into this a little bit there. You know, with the schedule out released last week, now all the win totals are out there and we can do some, make it a little bit actionable here. We're going to start off with the Buffalo Bills, Nick Whalen. Over 11.5 wins at minus 160. Bet or not bet?
So the Bills won 13 games a year ago. That was with me around this time, I think, saying that I was looking to fade the Buffalo Bills. I thought it might be a soft reset type of year. Could not have been more wrong. They were one of the dominant teams, of course, in the AFC. They've won at least 11 games now in five consecutive years. And it's worth noting that the over 11.5 wins is minus 160. So that is the favorite outcome. Look, I think this has to be an over for me, Jeff. When you get into double-digit territory, especially 11, 12, you know, it's always going to be dicey. But you look at the start of the season for Buffalo. They do host Baltimore in week one. That's a total toss-up game, but at least you get that game at home. After that, you get the Jets, you get the Dolphins, you get the Saints, you get the Patriots, you get the Falcons, and you get the Carolina Panthers. So even if they lose that game to Baltimore in week one, you have a pretty nice runway to get your season on track and feel good as you head into the meat of that schedule. You know, they do play Kansas City. They play Tampa Bay. They play Houston, Pittsburgh, Cincy, Philly, out of division. Those are all difficult games. But they get Kansas City at home, Tampa Bay at home, Cincinnati at home, and Philly all at home. So I think the schedule broke really well for the Buffalo Bills. And you look around at the rest of the division, and yeah, we expect the New England Patriots, who we'll talk about in a little bit. They'll be better. Those aren't free wins anymore, but I'm pretty down on this Miami Dolphins team. I mean, who knows what to expect out of New York Jets. I think you feel pretty good about picking up two wins there. So for me, this isn't over on 11.5.
I get it. And I share your pessimism, by the way, on the Miami Dolphins. In fact, that might be my favorite under bet overall. Is the Dolphins. I don't like what they did this offseason. I don't like their defense, especially the defensive side of the ball, their roster there. Mm-hmm. So sitting at 8.5 wins, I like taking the under on the Dolphins. We'll go into more detail on them later on, but that's definitely one of my favorite bets here. Why don't you quiz me on the next one here, Nick?
I would love to, Jeff. And there's a reason that we're switching it up here, because we are going to the Cincinnati Bengals to bet or not to bet 9.5 wins, Jeff. The over, minus 150. Of course, so many things went wrong for the Bengals a year ago. Defense completely collapsed, lost so many close games. Does that come back around this year? Would you bet the Bengals over 9.5 wins?
I would not. I'm going to start with the conclusion, and I'll tell you why. I probably won't bet it to go under either, just because I as much as I'm a self-hating Bengals fan, I am a Bengals fan. I don't want to root for them to lose. But at the Combine, Duke Tobin said he didn't want to spend more money on the same roster. Guess what? They spent more money on essentially the same roster, and they still even haven't settled the Trey Hendrickson situation. He's very unhappy, as we saw last week there, and they're nowhere close to getting that done. On the defensive side of the ball, where they desperately needed help, their only significant adds in free agency were part-time players. Oren Burks, the linebacker out of Philly, TJ Slayton, defensive tackle out of Green Bay, doesn't rush the passer. They're one of the worst pressure rates in football that the Bengals had last year. I don't see a path for that to change, at least from the players they added. It's a huge burden on their new defensive coordinator, Al Golden, to develop their young players like Shamar Stewart, their first-round draft pick, who, by the way, doesn't have a track record of being actually successfully rushing the passer in college football. He's a metrics pick. Miles Murphy, who had zero sacks last year, and the interior offensive line they added to. They spent heavily on draft picks on defense the last few years with very little to show for it there. Questions also remain on the interior offensive line. It's a classic four guys for two spots at guards. None of them premium guys. Two returning players, Cody Ford, Cordell Volson, free agent Lucas Patrick from the Saints, who was kind of a part-time player, and a third-round pick from Georgia, Dylan Fairchild. They passed over his teammate, Tate Ratledge, in the second round. It's never a good sign when Detroit snags that guy that you passed over, because Detroit's so good on the offensive line. They took him in the second round, the more touted guard there. I wish the Bengals would have gone that route instead of a linebacker in the second round. Just not that happy with that. Meanwhile, schedule-wise, slow starts have plagued the Bengals under Zac Taylor. 1-11 in the first 2 weeks of the season in his tenure. They do get Cleveland at Cleveland, and then home against Jacksonville to start. No offense against your fighting Jaguars, Nick, but that's a win they got to have. Before five consecutive playoff teams are on the schedule. At Denver, excuse me, versus Detroit, at Green Bay, versus Pittsburgh, all five in a row there. Once again, they get a road game at Baltimore in primetime on Thanksgiving night. Every time they play the Ravens on the road, it's in primetime. They never get the Ravens in primetime at home. It's ridiculous. But rant aside, it's also on short rest. They follow that with at Buffalo. It's not a great schedule. Not bet is my conclusion, Nick.
Okay. Well, we'll go with a not bet on Cincinnati at 9.5. I'm on the fence on this one, Jeff. I have this... Yeah. This belief that it can't go as badly as it did 2 years in a row. You laid out a pretty compelling case for why they have not filled some of those very obvious holes from last season. But I think some of the luck factor that was not with Cincinnati last year does come around. But the starts to the season, man, Zac Taylor being 1-11 in the first 2 weeks of the season to me is unbelievable. And getting Cleveland and Jacksonville to start it out. I mean, yeah, that should be the recipe, but who knows, man? Who knows? They found a way to lose the New England Patriots early last season. I believe lost to the Browns in Week 1 2 years ago as well. But we will move on. Jeff, to bet or not to bet the San Francisco 49ers over 10.5 wins. That was the last place San Francisco 49ers. This is +110.
You know, for a team that was drafting as early as they did, they're really getting a lot of respect here. You get it. It's Shanahan offense there. McCaffrey theoretically is healthy, but man, they turned over a good chunk of their roster. They did just pay Brock Purdy, and they really paid him with a no trade clause in there as well. They've got a friendly early schedule: Seattle, New Orleans, Arizona, Jacksonville. There you go with Jacksonville again. Why are we picking on Jacksonville so much? Very unfair. We'll talk about them next, by the way. Major questions about the defense. You know, they really turned over the defensive line. There's something similar to what they did that what the Rams did in terms of kind of clearing out some of the veterans to let the highly drafted young players play. And it worked for the Rams, obviously, when they tried to replace Aaron Donald. They still have Nick Bosa, though, too. And you know, a healthy Nick Bosa, you know, goes a long way. I think there's critical players that have to stay healthy on this team. It's McCaffrey, it's Trent Williams, it's Bosa. All those guys had health issues last year. Warner, too, for that matter. I think I'm going to not bet it, but I see the case for it. What say you, Nick?
I would have said not bet until I saw the schedule. And it's important to note that we know the schedule, mm-hmm. right? Like, we know the teams, but the way this breaks down, I think San Francisco has a really good chance to get off to a positive start. You get Seattle in Week 1, New Orleans, Arizona, and Jacksonville as your first four games. You should go 3-1, maybe even 4-0 in that span. You get Carolina, you get the Giants, Tennessee, Cleveland, Indy, all out of division. I like their chances against Arizona. You know, maybe you could split with the LA Rams. So I think they get there largely because this is not the type of schedule that we're used to the 49ers, who are, you know, always first or second in that division, having every year. They're favored in 15 of 17 games. Now, they were favored in, I think, every game last year. So take that with a grain of salt. But I think the way the schedule breaks down for the Niners, I would lean just over, even if I think the Rams are the team to beat in that division.
All right, very good. We're going to talk about your Jaguars next, but first, smarter bets start here and last all year with VSiN Pro. Right now, sign up on an annual subscription and get 14 months for just $199 when you use promo code PRO. That's 2 extra months free for less than 50 cents a day. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus full access to VSiN.com's analytics, betting trends, and expert breakdowns. Don't wait. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO to lock in this offer. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Okay, Nick, twice now we've referenced the Jaguars early on the schedule as being a good thing for their opponent. That seems a little unfair. We need to kind of vet the Jaguars. Jaguars, over 7.5 wins at minus 125. Bet or not bet?
I want to not bet this so badly, Jeff. Full disclosure, I am, of course, a Jaguars fan. They've gone over this number exactly 3 times since 2010, and usually they barely have reached that number. It is a tough start to the schedule. They get Carolina in week 1. You should win that game, but who knows? It's the Jaguars. Nothing is given. After that, you go to Cincinnati, then Houston, then San Francisco, then Kansas City. You know, their week 1 feels like it's a must win, or you're probably starting 1-4, maybe even 0-5, but they do have a lot of winnable games on the schedule. Again, Carolina, Seattle, Las Vegas, Arizona, in division. You know, you feel good about Tennessee. You know, I'm not really scared of the Colts. They've always played them well, even when the Colts have a better roster. You get the Jets. So I think they can get to 8 wins, but I still don't think this is a playoff team. Like there's a little bit of a disconnect here between like this being a relatively successful year for the Jags. I think they're an 8-9 team. I would not take them to win the AFC South. I think there will be a nice jump in competency, just bringing in a new GM, new coaching staff. But man, I still think Houston plus with 115 right now to win the South is a really good bet at plus money.
Tend to agree with you. I think they'll get a little bit of a dead cat bounce. I mean, heck, they even won a playoff game last year. They're not a bad team. They just do disappointing offensively. Eric Halterman joins us on the Progressive Guest Line talking baseball next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you, as we always are, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Time to turn our attention to the Major League Baseball slate. We got 12 games coming our way. No day games today, so a night-heavy slate on this Monday. We got our guy Eric Halterman, features editor over at RotoWire, joining us with his best bets for the night. He joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. Eric, welcome to the show. We will start with your team, the Philadelphia Phillies, who head out to Coors Field to take on the lowly Colorado Rockies. We see Christopher Sanchez going up against Kyle Freeland tonight. We do have closer issues, of course, for the Phillies after Jose Alvarado was suspended over the weekend. How do you kind of evaluate that closer situation going forward? What does it mean the rest of the year for the Phillies? And what do you like for tonight's game?
Yeah, it's a funny one where Alvarado's PEDs seem to help him find the zone this year. Didn't add any velocity. A bit of a weird one, but they're going to be without him for half the season. I think there's major fantasy baseball implications here. Go get Jordan Romano in most leagues. Go get Matt Strom in some deep ones. But as far as betting, mostly this thins out the Phillies bullpen, which hasn't been great by ERA, but actually has been better by some of the underlying numbers. It's something to consider for sure. But the main thing I want to consider in this game is that I don't think we need to bet Coors Field like we used to, or at least teams going against the Rockies at Coors Field. These Rockies are so bad that I think you can throw out some of your old rules. They are the worst lineup, context neutral, if you go by like WRC plus, which factors that out. They have a 67 WRC plus as a team. just a full third worse than the league average. But when you even add in the context, their runs scored at home per game, they're 14th, middle of the pack. So to see such an inflated line here, which makes sense given that it's Coors, I mean, one of the teams playing in this game is the Rockies, so the total's probably not going to get that high against Christopher Sanchez, who seems to be through his forearm scare, and we can go back to treating him as an excellent ace. We got an ace against a team that's middle of the pack at best, even with the Coors Field boost. Even if the Phillies score 8 on the other side, this still could hit the under.
In San Francisco, we got a matchup of two good lefties, Chris Bubich versus Robbie Ray. Robbie Ray, 6-0, 3.04 ERA. Chris Bubich, 4-2, 1.66 ERA. Truly a breakout star. I think the pitching might dictate where you're going with this one. Tell me what you got on this game.
Yeah, I like the Royals here. I am into Chris Bubich much more than I'm into Robbie Ray this year. And so if we can get a little, it looks like plus 114 on the Royals, I'll take that. Bubich, you mentioned the elite ERA. The ERA estimators like him too, not at the 166 level, but FIP at 268. Sierra, which is the one I tend to trust the most, 344. That is a good deal better than Robbie Ray, whose Sierra's up at 410, mostly because of a huge difference in walks, both of them striking out about 26 of opposing batters. But Bubich, 6.8% walk rate, whereas for Robbie Ray, 12.4%. And this is nothing new for Robbie Ray. Throughout Robbie Ray's career, he's missed a lot of bats, but also issued a lot of free passes. He's not quite missing as many as he did during his best season, so I'm pretty worried about the ERA about to rise for Robbie Ray. So even though we haven't really seen that Kansas City lineup hit as well as you would hope, I still think I'd take their side pretty much just based on Chris Bubich. I am, if not all in on Chris Bubich, I am pretty far in on Chris Bubich and everything he's done so far this year.
Yeah, he strikes me as one of those guys I get plus money on him, take it. But I want to delve real quickly into the metric, Sierra versus FIP versus any other predictive stats. Just like 30 seconds, why do you like Sierra? What is Sierra for the uninitiated?
Yeah, so FIP is the most basic ERA estimator, and it just takes the things you most directly control, strikeout and walk rate, and then home runs allowed. But FIP gives you full credit for your home runs allowed. XFIP is the next level up. It's going to just look at how many fly balls you allowed and assume you allow a league average percentage of those fly balls to go out. So especially early in the season, if a guy gives up a ton of fly balls, but somehow they all end up in the warning track, XFIP is going to be better at that. And Sierra is basically just that, but with a few extra tweaks to more accurately count different types of batting balls, say like pop-ups, for example. But basically, it looks at the things a pitcher most directly controls. If you want an easy-to-understand one, FIP is fine, but XFIP and Sierra, a little fancier, a little bit better.
Talk some Angels Athletics with Eric Halterman in a moment, but first, take your betting to the next level with FirstBet. Whether it's Santa Anita, Gulfstream Park, or Saratoga Racecourse, FirstBet puts the action at your fingertips. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com, and use that promo code BEASON200 to score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today at FirstBet. Again, that's one, stbet.com. Use that promo code BEASON200. Talk with Eric Halterman on the Progressive Guest Line. Eric, as we continue to work our way through this slate, I know you have your eye on an AL West battle, the Angels and the Athletics. Jose Soriano going up against JT Ginn, who makes his return from the IL. Now, you told us earlier this morning, you like the Angels money line here at plus 108, now up to plus 120 at DraftKings. So what pushes you towards LA?
It's mostly that I like Jose Soriano, who is not a perfect pitcher, certainly, and one who occasionally has some blowups. But Jose Soriano is one of these guys that throws very hard and keeps the ball on the ground. This often doesn't translate to an actual ace. It translates to, say, a Jordan Hicks or something. But it's a profile that I would trust to work in a tough hitter's park, like, for example, the minor league park that Sacramento is playing in this year. If you miss some bats, Soriano hasn't missed as many as you'd hope this year, but specifically if you keep it on the ground, the fact that the outfield is small or that the ball travels doesn't matter quite as much. And Soriano has an elite ground ball rate of 62% this year. The whip is high because he walks a lot of guys, but he avoids the three-run homers by just getting a double play or, you know, getting a rally of singles against him. JT Ginn on the other side is fine, but I don't know if he's much more than that. 47 career innings, a 4.34 ERA. None of the underlying numbers look particularly interesting. So if I can get plus money on Jose Soriano, who I do like, against a pitcher who's nothing special, two lineups here who are nothing special, Soriano's the guy who stands out to me in this game, so I'll take the plus money there.
Cubs Marlins in Miami. We got Ben Brown versus Edward Cabrera in this one here. Cubs are a -170 favorite. Total's 8.5. What do you like in this game?
Yeah, I can't quit Ben Brown. Maybe I should quit Ben Brown soon. Maybe his numbers are going to end up looking rather Edward Cabrera-ian by the end of the year. But I think that there's enough here with Ben Brown that he can beat a bad lineup like the Marlins. He's had some good outings. He's had some bad outings. He just doesn't have really a third pitch. And as a two-pitch guy, sometimes if one of those two pitches are off, you just can't really adjust that day. You're just done. So that's the real downside with Ben Brown. But really in this one, I like the Cubs a lot more than the Marlins. And betting on Ben Brown to win is the only interesting thing I've found here. The Cubs money line, just not very good. Ben Brown's outs prop, I think it's sitting at 16.5 a lot of places, and he's gone, you know, 15 or 16 outs a lot of the time. So if we just bet on Ben Brown to win, we just need him to get 15 outs, five innings. If Ben Brown goes five innings and they're good innings, I think the Cubs will be winning at the end of those five, and I think the Cubs will get a win. I am more confident in Ben Brown going five than going 5 2/3, because they seem to pull him out right after an even five or 5 1/3 a lot of the time. So I think Ben Brown win threads the needle and gives you a much better payout than some of those related options.
Talk with our guy, Eric Halterman, our features editor on the MLB side of things over at RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Eric, let's get to the Astros and the Rays. This one down in Tampa, -142 is the money line price for the Rays. Total sitting at 9. This is Colton Gordon making just his second career start, made his major league debut last week. He'll be on the hill for Houston. Ryan Pepio on the mound tonight for the Rays. Now, I will tell you, Eric, I have both Ben Brown and Ryan Pepio in my most important fantasy baseball league. You already gave us some good news on Ben Brown. Are we doing the same for Ryan Pepio?
Well, I don't know if I'd count it as news. I'd count it as good vibes or something, but I'll give you some good vibes, yes, vibes on Ryan Pepio as well. I'd take the Ryan Pepio win here as well. I like what Pepio's doing this season. The strikeouts are a little bit down, but overall, he's a very solid all-around pitcher. The question is, do we like the money line? I just don't really think you're getting a very good payout here against Colton Gordon and the Astros. So I think a way of picking the Rays to win would say, let's just assume they're going to be beating the Astros after five because Ryan Pepio's a lot better than Gordon, and that Pepio will seal the win. You could also look at Ray's first five here, but basically this is a big advantage on the starting pitchers. And when that happens, if the payout for the win is way better than the payout for the money line, I think it's pretty interesting to take a look here. So I would look at Ryan Pepio against the Astros for that win.
All right, there we have it. Pepio to get that win, +155 at DK, and Ben Brown to do the same, +150 in that Cubs-Marlins game. Eric, awesome stuff, as always, man. You can check out Eric's work over at rotowire.com. You can find him on the RotoWire YouTube channel. Check him out on Twitter, @Eric_Halterman. More baseball talk coming your way. We'll talk some O's. Jeff's got his best bets for the night. We'll do that next on Prop Point.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're back here on Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network. I'm going to talk some Major League Baseball to finish out the show. We are taking you up to the top of the hour. As always, it's Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. That'll start up at 3 p.m. Eastern here on the network. Jeff, before we get into your best bets for this MLB slate, we did get some news over the weekend. We have our third manager firing already this season. And I believe you and I discussed this briefly on the show last week and kind of jokingly said, yeah, the Orioles would be next when they fire their manager. Well, it's officially happened. The Baltimore Orioles are 15-30. They are 11.5 games out in the AL East. They have one more win than the Chicago White Sox. They've lost six in a row. the struggles continued after making the Hyde move over the weekend. I'll let you pontificate as far as what this could mean for the Orioles, but are we looking at a team that's just dead? Like, is there any hope for this Orioles team to climb back into even the wild card picture?
It's funny. My good buddy, Joe Sheehan, writes a regular newsletter, and he pontificated that it's possible. This is like the worst team that still could make the playoffs. They need a lot of things to go right, and they haven't gone right so far. Especially, you know, the starting pitching has been horrific, and we expected it to be horrific. They could get a lot of key players back, but I'm having a hard time seeing. They've dug themselves such a hole at this point in time. And, you know, a managerial firing is always like the last resort before like the architect of the team has to get fired himself. And, when the GM doesn't replace Corbin Burns with anything noteworthy, Charlie Morton, Kyle Gibson, come on, who just got DFA'd, the analysis has to start there. And we talked about this a little bit this morning on our SiriusXM show, that when a team goes somewhat all in, goes and gets a player like Corbin Burns, you need to back it up with other moves, because you know that the player is probably going to be a rental and you need to kind of go all in on that. And they didn't. We talked about it at the trade deadline, the baffling trade for Trevor Rogers, where they gave away Kyle Stowers and Connor Norby. And we're at the time, we're like, okay, well, they're not going to even necessarily miss those two prospects. But guess what? Kyle Stowers is actually alone outperforming this, and Trevor Rogers hasn't thrown a pitch. We were first guessed this deal at the time, and it's an opportunity cost. It doesn't allow you to make other future moves. I also wonder about the development machine that is the Orioles. Adley Rutschman has taken a big step back. Westberg's been hurt. Kobe Mayo has taken a step back. We're finally starting to see Jackson Holliday kind of take that step forward, but the young hitters aren't being what we expect them to be. And have they been unlucky with injuries? Yes. Westberg and, Colton Cowser also getting hurt. Those are two big blows. I get all of that, but this is a failing in the front office before anything else. You just knew that this rotation wasn't good enough to compete.
Orioles are 9.5 back in the AL wildcard race right now. If you are so inclined to bet the Orioles to make the playoffs, you can get that at 11-1 right now over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Sticking with this theme, Jeff, the O's are in action tonight. They begin a 3-game set at the Milwaukee Brewers. Milwaukee is slight favorite on the money line, -115, total sitting at 9. This is Dean Kramer going up against Quinn Priester. So any thoughts on a side or the total here? I know you have some props you like on the Milwaukee side as well.
Yeah, I think the total, the over 9 is fine. It's even though the Brewers have been really slumping lately, since April 20th, 28th in Major League Baseball in WOBA, 287. But I think Dean Kramer might be the panacea for their ills. Kramer has really struggled on the road. 6.96 ERA, 1.48 WHIP in 32 innings on the road. Much better in Camden Yards, believe it or not. But 7 of the 10 homers he's allowed have been on the road. 7 of the 10 homers they've allowed have been against lefties. So I'm trying to find lefty sluggers to try to get a home run or get total bases. Jackson Churio, I won't be going with. He's a righty anyhow, but 4.48 OPS over the last 21 days. But Jake Bowers, playing pretty well. 80-89 OPS over the last 21. Not necessarily a home run hitter, but so I'll take the over 1.5 total bases with him at +205. Pretty good payout there if it hits. Christian Yelich, +500 hit a anytime home run is another play I kind of like there a little bit.
All right, let's move over to your team, the Cincinnati Reds. They are in Pittsburgh. Cincinnati -115 on the money line, total down at 8. This is Nick Lodolo, who is left-handed, Jeff, going up against Mitch Keller. And to put it lightly, the Pittsburgh Pirates not hitting left-handed pitching at an elite rate this season.
They are putrid against left-handed pitching. 68 WRC plus, 273 WOBA, 27.1% K percentage. So they're striking out a ton against lefties as well. The Reds, and they had a good weekend over the Guardians. I'm still not convinced that this lineup is really all that great, and especially on the road, and especially in a slightly favorable pitcher's park there in Pittsburgh. I'm not going to bet on the Will Benson trend. It'd be fun to see him hit a home run in a fifth straight game. Probably won't get there on that one there, but I can see people trying to pull that off. Keller's usually better at home on the road. It hasn't been the case this year, but there's like an early start against the Yankees that's really skewing all of his numbers. A couple of things I like here. I'll go with the under in the game, the under eight runs total at -112. And I'm going to take the over on Lodolo's strikeouts at 5.5 Ks at -110. I think the Pirates are up to the task of striking out at least 6 times against him.
The New York Mets, fresh out of losing 2-3 to the Yankees over the weekend, they now head over to Boston. Mets are road favorites tonight, -130 on the money line. Another game with a total sitting at 9. Kodai Senga going up against Hunter Dobbins. I know you have props for both of these pitchers, Jeff, so let us know.
Yeah, so let's start with Dobbins. He is a strike throwing machine. Less than 4% walk percentage, only 4 walks in 27 and 2/3 innings. The Mets might work the count a little bit better than other teams do that he's faced so far. But I think I kind of like the under 1.5 walks. So just keep on betting on the trend at +115. Kodai Senga is still rolling. Hasn't allowed more than 2 earned runs in any start. Early schedule was pretty comfortable for him. That's true. But he does in his last 3 starts, he's had 2 starts against Arizona, and I fear that offense. So if Senga is doing that against Arizona, I'm impressed. So I'll continue. It's kind of a chalky play, but I'll go the under 2.5 earned runs allowed by Senga at -135.
All right, we'll hit a couple more games here, Jeff, before we get to our G-Bank best bets of the night. The AL Central leading Detroit Tigers head out to St. Louis. Got the Cardinals as pretty hefty favorites, -162 on the money line. If you like Detroit, you can grab that at +136. Total hanging around at 8. This is Keiter Montero going up against Sonny Gray.
Yeah, it is. And Montero will be pitching in bulk relief. Lefty Sean Gunther will open. The Cardinals have a couple lefty hitters at the top of their lineup there. Montero, he probably needs that opener anyhow. It's good in his last 3 outings overall, like if you look at the earned runs, but the stat profile is really shaky. 16.5% K percentage compared versus a 10% walk rate. His FIP is 5.81. So even though his ERA is in the high 4s, he's really actually worse than that probably. Meanwhile, Detroit's offense is still a great offense. 3.32 WOBA versus right-handed pitching. So I'll bet against both pitchers here. I'll take the over at my eight runs at -105. I think that's a nice low total for that matchup, all things considered there. St. Louis is kind of a marginal hitting park there, probably league average. Wind will be right to left. There is some rain in the forecast. So I'm going to heads up there. Kind of don't mind, out of principle, anytime Detroit's getting plus money like this, to go ahead and put a little something on that at +136 also.
All right, let's finish out with the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. A uncharacteristic, we'll say, weekend for the LA Dodgers. Swept by the Angels. You think that continues tonight? I know you're taking a look at that Arizona money line, Jeff.
Yeah, I am. And the thing is, Brandon Fott's pitched pretty well against the Dodgers lately. Pitched really well in his last time out against them in Arizona. 6 1/3 shutout innings, 6 Ks. Had a couple of big strikeout games against them last year where he pitched pretty well. And Landon Knack's not pitching well right now. He's really kind of struggling. So even though the Dodgers are probably the better team, I'll go ahead and go with the team I think is playing a little bit of better ball right now. Again, getting plus money at +124.
It's time for our G-Bank best bets of the night. They are, believe it or not, brought to you by G-Bank. You can get the G-Bank Visa Signature Card right now. Most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances. That's even when you put your own money on the card. But G-Bank treats gaming transactions as purchases. You're saving up to 3-5% on cash advance fees and gaming transactions right there. Plus, with G-Bank, you're earning 1% cashback rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions, and you're getting 2% cashback rewards on all eligible purchases. You can apply now over at VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSiN, VSIN.com/GBank. All right, Jeff, no NBA tonight, so we have to get a little wild here with the G-Bank best bets. You just laid out some great ones that you like in Major League Baseball. Your best bet of the night is...
I'll go with the Jake Bowers one at over 1.5 total bases. That's what, especially because of the +205 price. But I'm also, the more I talked about, the more strongly I feel about Lil Adoldo over 5.5 Ks at -110. Nick, I see that you actually have baseball as your best bet tonight.
I'm doing the unthinkable, Jeff. This is what happens. I mean, I got to start preparing for life after the NBA season, I guess, right? We only got like 3 more weeks worth of NBA games. Mariners, White Sox, under 8.5 runs, -117 at Bet Rivers. There are a lot of eights in the market. You can get it at 8.5. Go grab it. Davis Martin, Luis Castillo, you guys have been pitching well. Cold temperatures in Chicago. We love the under in Mariners, White Sox. That's going to do it for the Monday edition of Prop Points. We will talk to you tomorrow. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming up next.